Instagram.
How you doing?
Hello, my Facebook family. Thank you so much for joining us here tonight. And guys, like I always tell you, we do not disappoint. We know that that District D Houston City Council race is a hotly contested race. And we've got some phenomenal candidates in that race. Tonight, we are going to be bringing you Mr. Travis McGee. And Travis is going to, we're going to learn a little bit about Travis, his background, where he's from, why he's so passionate about what's going on in District D, and what is his vision for the district. So please introduce yourself to us, sir.
Hey, I'm Travis McGee. Been a lifetime resident of District D. My yes. business is in Sunnyside, my house is in South Park. So I've been there all my life. Graduate of Ebony Worthen, B.H. Grimes, Crispus Attucks. So I've been there for a mighty long time. I've been putting the work in for a mighty long time.
And I too am a Worthen graduate.
I knew she was gonna say that. She was not gonna let that pass.
I don't discriminate.
That's right. But we wanted to bring Travis here because, you know, we have got candidates that are vying for that particular city council seat in District D. I think all of the people that we've gotten to interview are lifelong District D residents. You know, Travis, here's the thing, and I'm sure you've heard of this and you see it happen all the time. Mm-hmm. People get, you know, they grow up, graduate from high school, graduate from college, start their businesses, and the first thing they want to do is get on the first thing smoking out of the out of the hood.
Right.
Okay. And the people that we've had the opportunity to interview have not been that type at all. Right. And you for sure are not that type, and you're putting the work in, and you're still putting the work in.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. Where'd you go to high school and elementary school?
Ebony Worthen. I went to Ebony Worthen, B.H. Grimes.
And B.H. Grimes. I know both of those places.
Right.
Yes. And let me just say this. Worthen has changed a lot in the last few years.
Right.
Yes, it absolutely has. What are some of the changes that we've seen Worthen go through?
Well, first,
it's a beautiful building.
Yeah, it's a beautiful building, but Worthen be on the closure talk all the time. Each and every year be on the closure talk.
Why?
Because people are not involved, and it's the overall goal of the Texas is to charterize all our schools and privatize education.
Yes, that's true. That's true. We're teachers. We know that.
Right.
Absolutely. And, you know, knowing that schools like Worthen, schools like Yates, schools like Wheatley, schools Cashmere. like Cashmere, Jones, Sterling, all of these schools have long history and a very, very strong presence in their communities.
Right.
And I know that the Worthen graduates, they come back and support that school. What do you think is going to have to be done, and what can the actual constituents do to make sure that their school does not end up on the chopping block?
Well, they have to get involved, and all of this is political. House Bill 1842 was horrible legislation.
Explain it to us.
Okay, House Bill 1842, any school 5 years or more in the RR status, they should close that campus or take over the whole district. That's like saying if your neighbor house is out of compliance, they get to take your property, your life savings, the rest of your property.
Yeah.
So that was a horrible bill, and most of our legislators voted for it. Whether it was a mistake or not, they should have read that.
Exactly.
Came back to their constituents and allowed us to make that decision.
Right. Well, Travis, tell me this. You went to Worthen, went to schools over in the Sunnyside, South Park area. What was it like when you were growing up in that area? Now, I know we've seen a whole lot change in these areas. I'm going to say within the last 10 years.
Right.
And we're seeing it change real time now.
Right.
New structures being erected.
Right.
New demographics, different families from different ethnicities moving into the area.
Right.
What was it like when you grew up?
Well, it was cool. It was family oriented.
Yeah.
It was the Black Wall Street back then.
Yeah.
Sunnyside was actually the Black Wall Street.
And lots of black owned businesses.
Right.
Yeah.
And we had options other than college. We had vocational.
Yes.
Vocational trades, and that's what they took
in the
out
high
of the schools.
Yes.
Right. And they took those out of the high schools, which we had them for free, and gave them to the community colleges and charged them for.
Yeah.
And not only that, you stand a better chance getting a trade for free once you're incarcerated. That doesn't make any sense
that's
at all.
True.
They really took those trades out of the schools because the jails was empty at one time.
Yeah.
You know, and that made those trades made us independent.
Absolutely. And the thing is, you know, little by little, we have seen public education move a little bit more in the right direction when it comes to allowing some college to be gotten for free in high schools.
Right.
But I think you're absolutely right. As far as having everyone does not want to pursue a four-year college degree. Right. People have crafts and skills, and they want to hone those crafts and skills and get out and open up their own businesses.
Right.
And, you know, that is not something that it seems like that people are looking at and taking seriously.
Right.
And now more so than ever, Travis, with the advent of the internet, where people can self-promote. It used to be where you had to have a deep pockets in order to promote your business and try to market.
Right.
Now you can self-promote, so people can actually build very sustainable businesses
right
on their own.
Right.
And that has, I believe, leveled the playing field a whole
it
lot.
Has.
Right. Yeah. Travis, are you from a large or a small family? Tell me about your family over there in the Sunnyside area.
Well, my mother's from Mississippi.
Okay.
And my dad is from here.
Okay.
And so I am from a rather large family.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you say Mississippi or Louisiana.
Okay, exactly. I'm from Louisiana. Yeah,
that go pretty deep. But
that's right.
My family had a roofing business in the Sunnyside area for over 50 years.
Okay.
So when it comes to things like asphalt and stuff like that,
right,
I have a lot of experience with that.
Okay.
Even these raggedy streets we drive on.
Yeah.
I have a lot of experience with that.
So what was your family's roofing company called?
M&H Roofing.
We used y'all.
I know.
That's what I had to ask. We used y'all.
Well, yeah. Even when I was at Worthing.
Yeah.
That sixth period, the newest gymnasium we had at the time, that sixth period, I used to go and put my work clothes on. We put the roof on that
wow
building.
Wow. So you were seriously a born entrepreneur.
Right.
Oh,
right.
My goodness.
And, you know, that's so important for young people to see people like you. You're a born entrepreneur. And so many times we only have been able to see ourselves working for others.
Right.
And working for companies and being at the will of others.
Right.
Right.
But when you have entrepreneurship in your blood, it's easy to pay it forward.
Right.
Absolutely. Travis, now, did your parents teach you about community and being a catalyst for change, or where did it come from where you looked around and you saw things and challenges that were going on in your district?
Right.
And you said, wait a minute, it's got to start somewhere. Why not with me?
Well, yes, my parents instilled that in me to stand up for what's right.
Yeah.
Even when nobody else does.
That's right.
You have to do it. But this started way back in Worthing. I remember they came over and asked us, can we compete with Ballet and Lamar on the star test?
Oh, wow.
Second floor right outside of Coach Elliott's classroom. Most of the other kids was kind of shy to get on the camera or whatever. But
yes.
But I told them, yes, we can compete. But the only time you all come to our neighborhoods when somebody gets shot away
from
the school.
That's right.
Somebody gets
something
harmed,
negative.
Something negative. Right. And so as a civic, I've been a civic leader for like 19 years.
Okay.
And I was just tired of how the city was overlooking our areas.
Yes.
Right? It's always an excuse. You call 311, you get 311 excuses. You call 911, you got to answer 911 questions.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's unacceptable.
Yeah.
We have 9-foot lots in our area. Even after someone to get raped and killed, and those lots still exist there.
That's right. I remember that.
Right.
That's right.
You had at one point, water used to stay in our area like two weeks at a time. Stuff like that. We have this drainage fee that we're paying now. Rebuild Houston. It's right. Over $1 billion sitting down there. But look at the conditions of our neighborhoods.
Right.
Everybody always hollering about they from the hood and this and that and that and this.
Yeah.
They only say that when they in the hood.
Right.
But when it's time to actually represent the hood.
You can't find.
I'm talking about on some of these elected seats.
Okay. Got right. you. Got
yeah.
You.
They get amnesia.
You can't find.
They missed in action.
Yeah.
You know. So that's what drove me to do it. I mean, If I'm not going to do anything about it, I can't complain about it either.
That's right.
That's right.
And
I'm a stickler for that. If you're not going to get involved. Keep your mouth closed.
That's right. And Rebecca's going to ask you something, but let me throw this out there, Travis. How have you found that it's hard when you, if you were leading the charge for something, mm-hmm. is it hard to get people behind you? You know, a lot of times people like to push somebody out to the front, but then when you need that army behind you, it's not as easy.
I agree. Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to the Sunnyside Multi Service Center. When yes. they was trying to place that on top of the dump.
Right.
I spearheaded that.
Yeah.
We stopped that.
Yeah.
We stopped that. 2018, when they was trying to hand the schools over to the state then. We was there from 4 that evening to almost 1 o'clock the next morning.
Yeah.
I spearheaded that. We stopped that.
Yeah.
See, people always want to holler, we this and we that.
Yeah.
But when you really need that army behind you,
right?
Most likely they're not there. When they was closing grounds, we put over 300 people in that school trying to stop it.
Yeah.
You know, each and every time they came out to Ebony Worthing, I was right there.
Yeah.
And when sometimes, you know, when you say, I this, I that, people want you to say we, but we wasn't really there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I
wish they was there, so it'll be much easier for us to fight this thing.
Yeah.
You know? But that's, I mean, if we get involved, see, we only want to show up to homecomings and homegoings.
Right.
All the time.
Yeah.
We can't do that. If we had the same passion for everything that affect us,
yes.
everything come in. If we really understood what support is.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Everything else will come easy.
Right.
To our community.
Right.
So what do you think is going on? What do you think is going to take for the Houston community to regain control of our school district and avoid facing repeat of what we're experiencing now? Would you agree that being proactive is the key?
Proactive is the key. First thing they're going to have to do is get rid of that standardized testing. That proves absolutely nothing. Only thing it proves.
How realistic do you think that is? Now, I agree with you.
Well, Florida school district is much bigger than ours, and they got rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Only thing it proves is that our lawmakers don't mind wasting $100 million a year on a 5-year contract, $500 million in 5-year span mm-hmm. on the standardized test. I have never taken a test where I don't know what my passing grade is until after the test is done.
Right, right.
So they can move the goalposts anytime they get ready.
Yeah. And they have.
And they have. Been.
They have been.
They have.
They have been. Thank you. Yeah. So, like, say for instance, we didn't have that many schools failing, right? That they said.
Right.
But the bill was retroactive.
That's true.
You understand what I'm saying? So it doesn't matter
how the
kids are performing now.
That's right.
Now it was some time ago that it was a lot of people saying that, well, a city council person shouldn't be speaking about the schools and this and that. And that.
What? No, who said that?
Education affects everybody's
business. Everyone's business. Right? Absolutely.
They say, well, that's not a city council. I'm like this here. If I'm elected employee,
that's right.
Anything affect my constituents should affect
that's
me.
That's absolutely
all.
Right.
Right.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
It's ignorant.
Matter of fact, if it had made national news, the only reason you see a lot of them now because it made national news.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting because now this is just me. I can only speak for myself, but I think that. Like you said, anything that affects the people and anyone who can get the ear of people so that they can it can be echoed and many more people hear about the things and the challenges.
Right.
That's who needs to say it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And I have one more. Uh-huh. There are some political social pundits out there who will argue that. Let me say that again. There are some political and social pundits. It's been a long day, guys. Forgive me. Y'all know what I do for a living. There are some political and social pundits out there who will argue that with the degree in which the demographics of the city is changing, especially many of the communities within District D,
mm-hmm.
that it's crucial to have representation that also reflects the growing Hispanic population. In being able to relate to this community, important for the District D, important for the District B city council person?
Oh, yes. As fast as Houston is growing,
they
might have to add some council seats.
Yeah.
To properly represent everybody.
Right.
You know, to properly represent everybody.
And I teach in the Hispanic community. And from what parents are telling me,
mm-hmm.
just that, and what I found out is that they don't have representation for their communities, right, which I did not know that.
Right. My my vice president in a civic club is Hispanic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And they come out, support.
Absolutely.
And work is just as hard as we do.
Yeah.
You know, we, if you think about it over the years, we allow Dr. Phil and people like Oprah tell us what's best for our billionaires telling right. poor people
yeah.
how what's to raise their kids and what's right. best for them, right? You know, but like, I know how to do carpentry work, roofing, some of everything, right?
Yeah.
I was going to Texas Southern for law.
Yeah.
I didn't get that far, but I couldn't afford it anymore because they did not give me financial aid.
That's right.
But I knew how to build things and to put roofs on.
Yeah.
Plumbing work, you name it, I know how to do it. And right. I teach the young men in the neighborhood the same thing that I've learned.
Oh, wow.
Let me ask you this, Travis. You know, it's interesting that you say that, because that speaks to a point that I want to make. How important do you think it is for young men and women
mm-hmm.
to see someone like them, see someone who is living among them,
right,
be a person who is representing them where decisions are being made?
Oh, that's very important. It's like, I believe that we should be represented 365, 24/7.
Yeah.
Not just around election time, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Not 30 days around election time, right. 60 days around election time, 90 days around election time.
Yeah.
I don't think coming to our community and doing an electric slide with us is representation. I don't think giving out turkey dinners and fish plates and fried chicken is representation when we got more halfway houses and churches in okay. our neighborhood right now. When we, this so-called affordable housing, $300,000, $400,000 for Sunnyside.
Yeah.
Who is it affordable for? You have a crack house on one side,
yeah,
halfway house on the other side, and a 10-foot ditch in the front of it.
And in my right. parents' neighborhood, there's a house right now, beautiful, gorgeous
yes. right.
But it's a house right now that's going for $360,000.
Yeah, it's a beautiful house, yeah.
Airport and 280.
This is the thing, though. What people don't understand, yeah. when they build that house, mm-hmm. it raised the taxes up for everybody's property.
That's right.
Exactly.
And it was this ordinance called Chapter 42, which allows them to build six structures on one lot. So
okay.
you put six structures on one lot at right. $300,000 a piece. That's $1.8 million.
Yeah.
Next to Miss Johnson's house, who's been here for 60 years.
Right.
Whose property value is $65,000.
Right.
So the goal is to price us out, not give us the grocery stores, to flood us out, to take the schools and stuff like that. And once everybody leave, then they ain't going to come back.
Okay.
Fix
well,
everything.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to speak to exactly that.
Right.
Now, Travis, how important do you feel that it is? Well, let me just read this. You have made a conscious decision to stay in the community
right.
where you grew up.
Right.
And have seen the changes in Houston in the past 15 to 20 years.
Right.
Do you feel that it's possible to strike that balance between preserving the historic integrity of these areas and embracing the change and diversity that's presenting itself real time?
Right.
So is it okay to come in and beautify or build and in these areas and lift the property value and make it to where even people of color who may be of a higher socioeconomic mm-hmm. strata may want to come in and live there? Or would you say that we need to just leave it like it is? Is there a balance?
No. Affordable, we got to define what affordable mean, though.
Okay.
Affordable should mean affordable for the actual demographics where you're building it at
correct.
Versus the people who are building it.
Yes.
Now, it might
yes.
be affordable for the people that's building it, but this is what we're not looking at with all this new construction. We have horrible failing infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
that's why you see
I
all
agree.
Those water main breaks that's
yes,
been breaking and staying the water running for 6 months at a time.
And then it collapses the street.
Right. There
yeah.
you go. So
yeah.
you cannot continue to build anything on top of bad infrastructure.
Exactly.
Right?
So that's what like it was maybe about 12 years ago. Montrose had these structures that they was building 6-4 on. And the feces and the urine has started coming back.
Oh, okay.
Home.
Okay.
You
okay.
see what I'm
yeah.
saying?
Yeah.
Because the infrastructure is overwhelmed.
And it was right. just old.
And it's old.
Yeah.
That's why now back in the day, y'all remember when y'all used to see the city come out and turn them water hydrants on and stuff
right,
like that.
Right.
That was taking pressure off of those
lines,
bad
lines.
Pipes. And yeah. Stuff. It also was saturating the ground so that it could move when it get too high.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And the streets wouldn't crack up the way that they're doing.
Yeah.
So some things are just common sense approaches and they're not using common sense with it.
Well, do you think they're not using common sense because it's costing them money and they're trying to take the cheapest way? And I'm just asking the question. I'm not saying this is my opinion. I'm just asking, do you think that they stopped doing that because, quote unquote, trying to save or because more cost efficient?
Well, all neighborhoods, one thing about me, I'm gonna be real with it.
Yeah.
All neighborhoods are not treated the same.
Oh, exactly.
All
they're not. Of course they're not.
I remember a water main broke on Westheimer.
Right.
You know, they normally say, you got to call 311. They stayed out there for 24 hours.
Making sure that it was
the
prepared.
Same day and fixed it. They didn't tell us you have to get this service request number and call back and all that kind of stuff. So,
I'm sorry.
Right.
That now that you mentioned that, because I remember my dad was so frustrated because he just was like, because it was something the water main had broken in my parents' neighborhood.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And River Oaks, because my parents' neighborhood and River Oaks are about the same age.
Yeah.
The city, I don't know who it was, but from the city, they was like, well, we'll get to y'all after we finish. I mean, it wasn't no...
He didn't try to sugarcoat it?
No. He was like, well, we're in River Oaks right now.
Right.
So as soon as we're finished with that, and when we're completely finished with that, then we'll be on your side of town.
Right.
Let me ask you this, Travis, and you know, I haven't brought this up before, but this is something that my sister and I were discussing, mm-hmm. and she made a really, really good point. And you may be able to speak to this because this sits in the heart of District D, right there on Scott Street and South Acres.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
Affordable housing doesn't always mean single family homes to purchase.
Right.
No.
It means good, safe, clean
right.
housing for people in the community. I'm not sure the name of it, but the very nice community, you know what I'm talking about, of houses that sit right in front of Kip on Scott Street.
Right.
And it's been there for, I'm going to say, close to 10 years now,
right.
almost 10 years now. Right. And it is pristine. It looks the way that it looks when it was built. And that is affordable housing, rental, isn't it? Is it not?
Well,
or is that purchase?
Again.
I don't know much about it.
Let us know.
Yeah, we don't, again, I don't know.
We have to redefine
what
affordable housing means.
Yeah.
Because normally they will make a percentage of the apartments for housing.
Okay.
And then they'll make a percentage of it for, you know what I'm saying?
For market value.
Right.
Rentals.
Right. Okay. So we got to say what affordable really means.
Okay.
Now for the area, $1,700 a month is really not affordable.
No, that's not.
The people who have it.
That's market value.
Right.
Yeah.
The people who have it will say that it is affordable.
Right.
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 They're not talking about that mom that's catching 3 buses to get home. Right. Getting up at 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, getting her kids ready for school and going to work and stuff like that. It's not affordable for her.
Well, now let me ask you this, because I'm asking you that because I remember when that particular that particular neighborhood
mm-hmm.
was built right there in front of Kip.
Right.
And one of my students that I taught when I was over at Navarro, he said that we're getting ready to move into a house right over there. And he was moving from, let me get it right. He was moving from Clayton Homes.
Clayton mm-hmm. Homes.
So it was going to be subsidized.
Right.
So as part of that, in that particular neighborhood is what you're saying that a percentage of that is subsidized.
I'm saying that some of the multi-family housing,
right?
Most of the multi-family housing,
yeah.
Some of it is percentages for housing, Section 8,
yeah,
and some of it for you know market value. Rent,
yeah.
Right?
So, Travis, let me ask you this: with that on that same talking about the Clayton Homes,
yeah,
when they closed Clayton Homes, one thing we noticed with our students that they were moving out into Spring,
yeah,
they were moving out into Humble,
Atascocita.
So, and you can tell me if I'm wrong.
Right.
I told Crystal, I said, I was like, okay, they're moving them out.
Yeah.
The people from Atascosa, Casita, Humble, all of these other places are moving back into the city. Mm-hmm. So is it by design that they push them out that far?
Right. Well, let's not say push because we don't know. I mean, because Clayton Homes, now let's be honest. Clayton Homes, they had not done renovation when Harvey hit. Many people died over in that area because
was salmonella in the water.
Yeah, and it was they had not been updated. Right. They had not been updated,
right. And that was her by design too.
Right. Yeah,
she hates when I say stuff.
Right.
No, but like I said, I know exactly where you're coming from. But you know, to keep the people over there in the conditions that they were in, was that equitable?
Right. No, it wasn't. But I think if they would just put we the people first.
Yeah.
Versus Hello. Politics.
Yeah.
Hello. Because each and every time, well, if you've been living in Houston, it don't have to be a storm for your house to flood. And people of color, for the longest, they really didn't know what flooding mean. You don't have to have
that's right. 3 feet of water. The hood.
Yeah. You don't have to have 3 feet of water in your house. If that water leave the city detention at any time, enter your house from the ground level, you flood it.
Exactly. That's right.
Right?
Yeah. That's right.
They didn't know what that means. So, but it just had to be a more common sense approach. Each time they use the word study, that means money.
That's right.
That means money. We don't need any more studies.
Right. And the thing about it is, at what point do the studies segue into action?
Right.
Because at this point, I feel like you know what the problem is.
Right.
What are we studying? Right now, it's solution time because you know what the problem is.
Take for instance, and a lot of people have forgotten about this, and most of the time you forget about money, that money grow legs.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Rebuild Houston was supposed to fix the infrastructure, the sidewalks, these streets, the roadside ditches, curb and gutters, but we have over
$1 billion. That initiative. What was and remind everybody what the Rebuild Houston initiative was.
In 2010, that's that drainage fee that you're paying, right?
Right.
That's the drainage fee, and they calculate about how much concrete you have on your property.
Okay.
Right.
So even these $300,000 homes, the more concrete, the more it's going to cost, the more it's going to raise, you know, and it's going to take more grass and soil away where the water can soak in.
That's right. That's right.
And you have to build like on a 4 or 5 feet platform, right?
Right.
So again, Ms. Johnson going to get flooded out or priced out one way or another. Uh-huh. But that was in 2010 we voted on that. And Travis was going all around Houston telling people not to vote for it because it was missing who, what, when, where, and how.
Right.
And how much.
Right.
We basically signed a blank check. It's been getting used for everything but drainage and infrastructure.
Right. And the building continues.
Right.
The building continues.
Right.
And you know what, Travis, I'm going to be honest with you. I never really put the two and two together until you said it, about when our sewer system and drainage system being so old, there are some areas of Houston where that has not been retrofitted and updated or replaced since the 40s and the 50s.
Right.
But then again, you have to understand too, Crystal, that's about design, because if you go into those neighborhoods where those drainage and sewage systems have not been fixed, of course it's going to be an atrocious smell.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to move into that? So that means
some of that is very expensive property. Have you guys gone down Braeswood by the old police substation?
But let me finish.
And the smell is atrocious.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. So and then that smell is causing people to get sick. So what is, and then if people get sick,
it affects the home values.
Right. If people get sick and die out, great. That means I don't have to worry about your taxes. I don't have to worry about all of that. You will just move.
But but see, the thing about it is the people who live in some of those areas, they yell out and stomp their feet and they're heard.
Yeah. If they yell out and stomp their feet and if they even understand what they're yelling and stomping their feet about.
The people in District D, Travis, the people in District D, we know that you say you now are in the South Park area, grew up in Sunnyside, live in the South Park area now.
Right.
In the South Park area, that area demographically is so different from what it was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Jones High School, and we talked about this last week, but went from being a comprehensive high school to a to a structured high school for health careers. Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's important for us to keep comprehensive high schools in those neighborhoods, or should we just depend on the school choice program and busing kids wherever they want to go? Is it a place for a neighborhood high school anymore, or is that the thing of the past?
No, it's a place for, but it got to be equality and equity.
Yeah.
At all schools, yeah. Right? You can't you can't give one school. Some schools didn't have air conditioning.
Some schools didn't have
nurses.
That's right.
And things like that. But
or shared nurses with other schools. Yes.
But they expect them to perform the same.
Yeah.
On these tests and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So my thing is, like I said, if the only way that these schools are going to improve for the long term is to get rid of the standardized testing. That's it. Allow the teachers to teach again, right? We had end of the semester exams and stuff like that, right? But if they continue with these standardized testing, especially if you don't know what your passing grade is going to be until afterwards.
Yeah.
And the TA can control
true.
All that.
That's true.
You understand what I'm saying?
That's true. And you know what, Travis? Think about this too. When I was in school, it was much after when you and Rebecca were in school, but when I was in school, I graduated from high school probably at least 10 years before you graduated from high school. But here's the thing. There was something called an Iowa test that we used to take. Mm-hmm. It was a standardized test, but it was only a test that kind of measured your progress. It did not weed people out for certain things, and it was not held against you.
Right.
You had your final exam. If you passed that final exam, you walked across
that
stage.
Right. That's right.
And the thing about it is, as you look around, you look at people like myself and you and Rebecca, people still became successful without that standardized test.
Exactly. Right. The difference is, if you notice, each time we start mastering the test, they came with a new one.
Yes. Yeah. And at some point where I read, I don't know now, but they said in 2025, I was reading the Texas Tribune or something I was reading, mm-hmm. where they said in 2025, they're supposed to be phasing out STAR.
I believe it.
Right. And come with something different.
Okay,
but imagine.
Do you think kids should not be tested?
Oh yeah, they should be tested, but mm-hmm. from what the teachers taught them all year.
Yeah,
not nothing just made
that's right.
up.
That's
you know
right.
what I'm saying.
And you know, with me being a history teacher, I'm going to speak to this.
We both
because yes, yes, yes. I'm going to speak to this. I'm a U.S. history teacher, and I teach eighth grade students. So students 14-ish years old, mm-hmm. and some of the passages that are put into the STAR test for these kids to matriculate and to be able to maneuver through, mm-hmm. it's a whole paragraph that's written, Travis, in Old English. Now, it's so you cannot feasibly say that the words are not in English. Right. They're written in English, but they're put together totally differently from the way that people speak.
Right, right.
And to ask a student at 13, 14, 15 years old to decipher what is being said there.
Right.
Is that when it's difficult for me as an adult, I've got to read through it with a much broader vocabulary, with a much broader frame of reference than a 13 or 14 year old.
Right.
Is it equitable to have that student reading through that and trying to figure out, decipher what's being said and answer a question or to write a passage based on that? It seems to me as though that is a prime example of attempting to set students up to not
be
successful.
There you go.
And I'm saying that as the teacher. And this is what I said, and I've told Rebecca this. I told my supervisors this in the school district that I have taught in for a long time. I said, you know what? What would not be advantageous about when these tests are being made to have a symbolic group of eighth graders from across the state mm-hmm. sit and look at this. Look at how it's now. Think about how you spoke when you were in the eighth grade. Mm-hmm. Did you have nearly the vocabulary that you have right now?
No.
Okay. Were you able to, did you have the frame of reference as far as being able to experience different things in life that would make you look at things or be able to understand things differently? At 13, did you have that?
No, we didn't have too much of that.
Absolutely not. Okay. So let's get this sampling of eighth graders from across the state to sit down from all different types of communities. Let's get 10 of them, 15 of them. Read over that test and tell us what they think about that test. If that is something that's on the level that they feel that they can be successful on, why do we not do that unless we don't want to do that? Mm-hmm. Okay. Because when you have people who are master's degrees, doctorate degrees, and all different types of letters behind their names making a test for an eighth grader, well, you know what? Maybe without even trying, you're making a test that someone could master who has a master's or a doctorate degree.
Right.
I even when we were explaining to our higher ups, because, and this is so funny to me, if the school...
And I will say this, let me throw this in there. This was three or four years ago. When we did that, Rebecca, I can say this. Our higher ups in our district said, yes, we agree with this. This test is written on a college level. They said that.
But here's my thing to the state. Mm-hmm. I'm slow. I need an IEP. But y'all write the curriculum that we teach. So if the kids is not passing, wouldn't that fall on you? I'm writing, I'm teaching what you are directing me to teach. So we want to say these schools are failing, is these schools, and nobody is even looking at that aspect of it. You write these curriculums and telling us, hey, go teach this. Right. This is what they should master. This is what they should understand. This is what they, because our teachers, and for those of you who are not educators, Texas Essential Knowledge of Skills. This is saying from grades pre-K through 12th grade, these are what children should know by the time they walk across the stage.
Right.
In social studies, we have 128 TEKS, period. From August to June, we have to teach those TEKS.
Well, let's. Well, and I think, Travis, let me ask you this.
All right.
Do you have children who have come through the public school system here in Houston?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And being a parent and sending your children through the public school system here in Houston, what are some things that you have observed that you feel that maybe as a District D city council person that maybe you would be able to, or at least attempt to have more of a hands-on say in what goes into that classroom, and especially some dollars that may be able to be targeted towards classrooms as far as what the kids are missing or lacking there?
Well,
or even volunteers getting them in there.
Right. I discovered like some years ago that the city had gave over $7 million to charter schools from Ike funds.
Yeah.
So they could do what the city could have more role with the schools if they want to have roles with the schools. Right. Right? But as a council person, anything that affects my constituents is going to affect me also.
That's right.
I'm not just going to say, well, I'm a city council person, so I can't speak on that. See, my kids, we had to relocate my kids like 3 times.
Wow.
In the same school district.
Why, Travis?
They was closing the schools.
No.
They were closing Grimes, they closed Rose, they closed Dotson, the only African-American Montessori school in the state of Texas, they closed. Had a waiting list of 600 kids every year. Then they say they closed it for low enrollment, but they weren't letting the kids in. So that's why I say more people have to get involved though.
Yeah.
More people have to get involved. Stop allowing the elected employees to sugarcoat stuff and just to make them say anything. Like, if you think about it, if you don't have, I remember sitting in Worthing one night.
Right.
And it was right before that 2012 bun. I asked a question. I said, why are y'all not standing up for Grimes and Rhodes? Someone say, We just worried about wording. You're not going to have a wording without a feeder pattern.
That's right.
Hello.
That's
right. Please make sure it makes sense.
So, like I said, if we get those vocational trades back in the school, then you're going to see economic development in our neighborhoods. But for big chain stores to come to a neighborhood with poor drainage, poor infrastructure.
You can't attract them. You can't attract them.
Exactly. You cannot attract them.
Yeah.
I mean, because no business owner wants their store broken into every day.
Of course.
And have to wait 4 to 6 hours for the police to show up, getting flooded because...
Or have that kind of loss due to theft constantly.
Right, exactly.
The insurance is going to go up by the area code alone.
Right.
The zip code alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, let's recognize some of these people who have commented. We've got Sid out there. Hi, Sid. And Boris. Boris says Spring ISD told the state, actually, I think it was Spring Branch, Boris, but yet and still, this was just last week. Spring Branch ISD told the state that they would not be sending money for recapture. HISD should have done the same thing years ago to hire the best talent. Well, and let me say this too. And as far as hiring talent goes, as part of that talent pool that that works in a large ISD, Travis, it's not very easy to recruit teachers these days. It really, really is not. And if you recruit them, it's not easy at all to retain them.
Right.
And I did not realize the difficulty of this until we had, I'm going to call her like a little, a mentor, sister teacher who has been on the podcast with us before, Francesca. And we saw what she was up against. A lot of teachers these days, they are stretched thin. Teachers, especially new teachers, especially teachers coming out of non-traditional education careers, need to have a mentor that is literally walking them through the different things that you encounter as a teacher.
Right.
And if you don't have that, it can be extremely overwhelming.
Right.
And with the veteran teacher stretched so thin, who has the time to mentor?
Right.
You know, no one really has the time to mentor. But we ask this particular teacher, Travis, how is it that are you coming back next year?
Right.
And she said, I just can't tell you. And this was a first year teacher.
Right.
So I can't tell you how much that type of sentiment is echoed throughout the district year after year after year after year.
Right.
And it's just difficult to retain them.
Right.
So I have a question for
you. And
it's
not just the money.
Okay.
I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. As a future city council person, and you have businesses who want to come into District D, and they say, well, I want to, but this don't look feasible for me.
How would you attract them
and not just retract them but retain them?
Mm-hmm.
Because more businesses bring in more money for the district,
right?
So if District D, I mean, it's doing okay.
It's growing.
One of the largest districts in the city of Houston.
Right.
Yeah.
But if they say, you know what, I do want to put money into this district. I want to come and I want to have my businesses set up here. But I just...
They can demand things too.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's just not attractive for me to do it.
That's a good question, Rebecca.
Say, okay.
Well,
tax... How you being a business owner yourself, by the way.
Well, tax abatements is a good thing for business, especially big chain businesses, right? So what I would do, government entities swap property all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of these sites where they close the school,
yeah,
I will offer that as a swap with Harris, with the city or somebody to attract, like HISD could swap with the city properties, right?
Right.
So I will offer one of these properties to a HEB or Kroger's or something like that, right?
One of the sites, right? Yes.
Tax abatement. Now, but you have to make sure the infrastructure is correct, right?
Yeah.
And not only that, I will form co-ops within District D. All the the trades, like the plumbers, the electrician, they would have to register with my district. So say for instance, when a water main break, instead of waiting 6 months, I call one of those plumbers from my district.
And they already have been vetted.
They already been vetted.
Yes.
They already licensed everything. Right?
And have them submit a bid, just like those other bids that come through that nobody ever gets to see.
Not only will I do that, but I will have a kid working under that plumber to learn that trade also. Apprenticeship, to keep it going. Like I said, during the February freeze.
That was terrible.
It was horrible. I was able to go and take some youth with me and replace some of those pipes.
Yes.
For the seniors and stuff,
And show them how to do it. Yes.
So the young man was with me. He had already made $500 off the house that I made for that one day.
Wow.
One day.
And he could see that.
It was a water main break at the water meter next door to the house I was working on.
Yes.
The city had already dug it up, but it was on the customer side.
Okay.
So I allowed him. I told him what to do, right? Yes. $375 for that is dirt cheap.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I kept $50 and gave him the other $325 for my material, right?
Right.
Okay. So he left there with $825 for that one day.
So he had, his mind was open. His mind was open.
Right.
And that's just the power of exposing young people to something.
But think about it. If Travis is doing this and I'm just one person.
Yeah.
Why isn't our government entities doing this?
Why
are tax entities not doing the same thing? Right?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. It took 12 years to build Ebony Worthy.
Yeah, it did. Yeah.
It took a long time. So they should have had those kids learning some of that stuff at the sixth period and stuff like that. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Rebuild Houston for the next 50 to 60 years. It's going to be net vocational trades.
Okay.
Taking place in the city of Houston. Each and every time a flood or hurricane come, it pushed that construction back another 15, 20 years.
Wow. Right.
So why not train our kids?
Right.
For these jobs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They contract the work out anyway.
That's right.
It doesn't make any sense. So if you train them for it, now you have your tax base stand here in the city of Houston. Right.
Yeah. And I like, and in the community.
In the community.
And I like how you said that, because even when I told you a couple of years ago in my classroom, when my disc was wobbly and I kept putting in work order.
Yeah.
And one of my students who was in the sixth grade, mind you, one of my students said, "Miss Williams, why you keep waiting for a work order? You know I can fix
that." I can fix that. Right. Yeah.
He came in with his little toolbox the next morning.
Right. Yeah.
He flipped my desk over and he said, "Miss Williams, well, I know what the problem is. This screw is loose. This screw is 12 years old."
Right.
Yeah.
And was wrenched it up and like a brand new desk.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've been telling people that our elected employees focus on the senior citizens because that's their voting block, right? But the seniors are not the ones doing the drive-bys. Seniors are not the ones gang-banging. Right. The seniors are not the ones robbing the corner stores and stuff like
They're
that,
They're the perfect citizens.
Have to give our youth something to do, right? Because don't tell them if you don't go to college, you're not going to be nothing. That's
not the truth.
It's a lot of millionaires don't have a college degree.
That's right.
A lot of billionaires.
That's right.
I know. We also, with the Robin Hood Project, we feed the homeless monthly. We've been doing this for like 5 years.
Tell us about that.
Right? Okay. It was one November, I was dropping my daughter off to basketball practice.
Okay.
It was probably about, the weather was supposed to drop down to like 30 degrees.
Is that Trevisia?
No, my other one.
Okay.
That's my oldest baby there.
Okay. Hey, Trevisia.
She came out of LSU like 5 years ago.
Awesome. Okay. Awesome.
And my oldest daughter.
My middle baby, she's at St. Thomas University, basketball scholarship and academic.
Is she going into education?
No, she's going to be an electrical engineer.
Okay.
Middle baby. Encouraging.
Well, no, St. Thomas University, they have a huge education department.
So yes. I noticed this guy, he had a grocery basket full of pizza boxes.
Uh-huh.
Big, huge. This is a place over there by Mile Land, have those big old New York style pieces.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And by the time I picked her up from school,
yeah,
he had constructed a shelter with it.
Wow.
So I called my friend Tahir Charles and say, "Man, we got to do something." So we don't go out there and give them no sandwich. We feed them the same thing we eat.
Right.
Right. Fresh barbecue. We get up maybe about 5 that morning.
Start cooking.
Start cooking.
Yeah.
Wow. Around the holidays, they eat pecan pie, sweet potato pie, just like we eat, right?
Yeah.
Give them, they get a job interview we give them interview clothes.
Yes.
If they get our housing, we take up a collection. We somebody might have an old TV. Somebody might have a soap.
Help them get
we do it like when this last thing, like with the rodeo, you know, they have to have those black slacks and black shoes. Right. We took up donations. We have went as far as Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Wow.
When they had that bad storm down there a few years back, we went as far as Lake Charles, Louisiana. But it's a lot that we can do in the community. It's a lot that everybody, because I believe if everybody does something, everything will get done.
Okay, along those same lines, so if the mayor, whoever the mayor is at that time, says, okay, well, Travis, I love this idea. It's great, but we ain't got the money for it.
Which idea?
You had a bunch of them.
The business, when, like, we don't have the money to fund the projects. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just say all of them.
Right.
We don't have any money in our budget to fund the projects that you want to do for your district.
Right.
So
I go out and get it myself.
That's what I was going to say.
I would go out and get it myself. Like when the HEBs and stuff come, they're going to have to commit to a certain amount of jobs.
That's right. That's right.
To the youth and stuff. HEB pay like $14 an hour, $12 an hour. That's good money for 16 and 17
years. Right.
That's
good who don't have many responsibilities yet.
Like, I see all these job fairs. They have the numbers, but I want to see exactly how many people actually got hired from this particular area.
Right.
That's what I want to see.
Pull that
data. Right.
Travis, let me ask you this. If you could explain your vision in 3 words, or what 3 things would you tell us to explain your vision for District D and the city of Houston in the next few years to come? What do you see? What is your vision?
It just have to be 3.
I want you to paraphrase it down, since we're dealing with about literally three minutes.
You got to start with the better quality of life, safety, better drainage, drivable streets, education options other than college, and affordable housing versus what some consider affordable housing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So safety, like I say, we need community policing, right?
Absolutely.
What I mean by community policing, if a domino game is taking place, a barbecue pit is smoking, get out, get you a plate, get to know the people.
That's right. We don't try to break it up. Yeah.
We don't care if Metro police show up, HISD police show up, HPD. We just want somebody to show up within before 4 hours.
That's right.
Before 6 hours. You can get across the state line in 4 hours.
That's true. You know? That's right. Less than that, Travis. Less than that.
Quality of life. We shouldn't pass by now. The city ordinance is anything over 9 inches is considered weeds.
That's right.
But you have 10-foot lots that they pass
every day.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Even during the pandemic, they were driving through the neighborhoods putting those yellow placards up when we had those weeks of rain on seniors' home and stuff like that. They was tagging cars.
Right.
When you had to wait a month for some parts during the pandemic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you pass by a lot that's got grass as tall as me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a lot that can be done different. But the people, I always tell people for years, they say vote. That's not good enough. You need to research who you're voting for.
Come on,
and
Travis,
then go
speak
vote.
That gospel.
Just don't go speak out there and give your vote away. It's too important.
Yeah.
Like you have people like me. I don't never see politicians tell you to research them. I tell people to research me and everybody else.
Check my record. Check my resume.
That's right.
You know, and then some people will try to discredit the stuff that you've done. We had this thing called capital improvement request that the civic club presidents have to do. That's for infrastructure, sidewalks, drainage, speed humps.
Right.
That's just an application. That's what they say, right?
Yeah.
So my response would be, why you didn't put the same applications in then?
You know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
that's true.
So that's pretty much it. I mean, we have a chance to get. I know I'm the better candidate.
Okay.
I'm not being cocky or whatever.
Right.
Just look at the track record.
Okay.
When we was doing it with the Mother Service Center, we was going up against environmental lawyers. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
I don't have a law degree.
Right.
But we won.
Yeah.
We won. They didn't move it.
All it takes is research.
And that's what we did. We researched. It took drones over the property.
And the thing about it is, it's so much different when you have a heart for what you're doing. You're talking about your home.
Right.
You're talking about where you grew up.
Right.
You're talking about where you're raising your family.
Right. Right.
And that makes all the difference in the world. Travis, if someone, we're closing out, but if right. someone wanted to reach out and get in touch with you, if they're interested in working with your campaign, if they're interested in connecting with you, how would they do so?
TravisForHouston@gmail.com. Okay. I even give you my phone number, 832-488-7709.
Oh, you both.
Hey, I'm real. This election is very, 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 very important. Now, if your condition of your community or District D has not changed,
yes,
maybe the leadership
okay.
of District D should change.
Okay.
I mean, that's just we sugarcoating this, but
it is what it is.
Year after year, man, our neighborhood look exactly the same.
Yeah.
Everybody should be tired of those, I'ma do speeches, I'ma do this, but what have you done?
Right.
And the people need to stop falling for those cheap smiles and I'ma do speeches and get behind the people who have actually been putting the work in. I just didn't pop up out there. I've been out there. You can go to articles from the Chronicle found things newsworthy. I didn't call them, they came to me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So I mean it's just a track record. And anytime a person have this type of passion that they don't get paid for.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That they don't get to it.
Matter of fact, sometimes they blame the civic leaders for the illegal dumping, the condition of the streets and the poor drainage and stuff. I don't have a budget. I don't have a platform. Yeah. I don't have the department heads down in the city.
Yeah, that's ignorant for them to blame.
Right.
Because you don't have the resources to get none of that done.
Right.
You just put the word
That's right.
Out.
Right.
That's right. Well, Travis McGee, I want to thank you so much. When Anthony Scott called me last week and said, listen, you got to get Travis on there. You gotta hear what Travis has got to say because he's been out here putting in the work.
Right.
I said, well, tell Travis to call me.
Right.
And I think we connected probably about 30 minutes later, maybe.
Right, right.
And we were able to go ahead and get Travis on. But ladies and gentlemen.
And she hit me at 1 a.m. Hey, we got to get Travis on the show.
I said, we got Travis.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Travis, thank you so much for coming out. Rebecca, thank you so much. Before we go again, one more time, the email and the phone number.
TravisForHouston@gmail.com. 832-488-7709. We need volunteers. You can call, you can volunteer, you can donate, whatever it takes. But we number one on the ballot. And if you want to be number one priority for District D again, McGee for District D.
All right. Okay, Travis McGee, we got to go.
I know, just real quick. Every Wednesday, I know this is a lot to ask, but every Wednesday, if you can, think about us teachers in the schools. Please wear red for ed, for public education.
Red.
We are, every Wednesday, you'll see Crystal and I in some form of red. Please try to wear red ties, red something to support public education.
And teachers.
So that's what I wanted to say.
Okay. And thank you guys so much, Rebecca. Thank you so much, Travis. Thank you so much. You. And Rebecca Williams, like we say every week. We can do it. See you next week. Bye-bye.